Excellent. Nice to see everybody today. I'm from Los Angeles, so I'm enjoying the sunny but chilly weather. This was a topic that I had long thought about. I hear anecdotally, not infrequently, from some of my LGBT patients, from colleagues, from friends, you know, how do you go about finding a doctor that you can really mesh with? And last summer, I had the privilege of working with a wonderful medical student and a resident, so we finally implemented this idea and we did a national survey. I have absolutely no relationships to disclose regarding this topic or conflicts. As far as the background, the Institute of Medicine has documented from a number of studies that LGBT individuals experience significant barriers to receiving equitable health care. And a lot of these studies go back about 15 years and are very well done in terms of the rigor of the methods. LGB individuals from studies are significantly more likely to delay or avoid seeking medical care compared to heterosexual individuals, and one study documented 29 compared to 17%. Studies report that as high as 18% or more physicians are often, sometimes, or always uncomfortable taking care of LGBT patients. Yet little is known about the existence of programs that attempt to alleviate barriers and facilitate healthcare, including training that focuses on culturally competent and respectful care. The clarification to this is that there was a white paper that just came out in the last couple weeks from GLAMA, published by Shane Snowden, that actually focuses on this very issue of culturally competent training for LGBT patients. So the objectives of our study were to identify whether and what systems are in place at academic medical centers around the country to designate LGBT competent primary care providers for their patients, and to determine if at these centers LGBT competency training exists, and if it does, to describe them so we'd be able to help our own institution and others. The aims of the study were to perform a systematic survey of U.S. academic medical centers to assess procedures and policies for identifying LGBT-competent providers and whether training for providers existed to take care of LGBT individuals. We also wanted to identify whether there were particular institutional characteristics that could predict or were positively associated with the existence of procedures and policies around LGBT care. We obtained IRB approval, and we included all 138 LCME credentialed institutions in the U.S. as of May 2012. We contacted the chief medical officer first, and we asked if they were the best person to complete the study. And in some situations, they were, and other times, they referred us to somebody else. Sometimes they had a dean of disparities or the dean of the medical school. If we didn't receive a response after three phone calls and three emails, we just proactively contacted the dean at the medical school, and that increased our response rate. When we had the opportunity to speak with people on the phone, we conducted a 15-minute interview using a 7-item survey that we had developed. For people who had not initially responded, but whom we sent follow-up emails to, we included a copy of the survey, and in a number of situations, people completed the survey and sent it back to us as well. This map just represents the density of academic medical institutions around the country. You can see that Massachusetts does pretty well. California has 6 to 8 institutions, and New York has the greatest at 9 or more institutions. This slide represents those states that actually have an LGBT center of excellence. So these are institutions that provide direct clinical care, develop training, and are great advocates around LGBT care. And you can see they're mostly distributed on the West Coast and the East Coast. So the 7-item survey, the primary domains were questions around the existence of policies and procedures to identify LGBT competent or friendly providers, and whether LGBT competency training existed. All of the answers were dichotomous, with opportunities to respond with additional comments in an open-ended fashion. We also looked at institutional characteristics. There's not that much that's available, but we figured based on other studies and domains, not necessarily LGBT care, that we see geographic variation, for example. The type of funding that supports a school, whether it's primarily public or private, and also whether there was an LGBT center of excellence in that particular state. Our outcomes, as described in our aims, were to identify whether there was a policy to identify an LGBT competent provider, whether there were procedures matching this, and whether there was specifically a list of providers that, say, I was a patient that called up and said, I want to be referred to an LGBT competent provider, if that was available. We also asked if people were interested in doing more around LGBT competency, and again, the existence of training, and we decided to put it into as a three-level rather than just yes or no. We gave institutions credit if they had some level of LGBT training. We conducted unadjusted analyses, and then we did multivariate analyses, controlling for our institutional characteristics of region, type of school, and whether there was an LGBT COE. And then we performed adjusted analyses with logistic regression using STATA. So this shows that we actually had significant variation by region in terms of who responded and participated in the survey. We had a high of 88% participation in the West region and a low of 34% participation in the Northeast, with 45% in the South and 56% in the Midwest. These differences were significant. The differences between who participated between public and private schools were not significantly different, nor between those states who had a center of excellence in them or not. When we looked at whether institutions had a procedure to refer individuals to an LGBT competent provider, we found that nationally only 8.7 of our institutions had this, with a range of 6.7 in the West to 11.1 in the Central region, but this wasn't significantly different. Similarly, public and private and having a center of excellence were not statistically significant. Whether there were policies in place, only 4.4% of institutions had a policy. No significant differences by region, but there was by whether a school was publicly or privately funded. Private schools were more likely to have a policy to identify LGBT competent providers. Just under 15% of institutions were able to actually produce a list or tell us that they had a list of LGBT competent providers, but there was no significant variation by our institutional characteristics. Happily, 80% of institutions that participated said that they were interested in doing more around LGBT competency research, education, and training, with no differences by institutional characteristic. In terms of the availability of LGBT training, 16% of institutions said they had comprehensive LGBT training. 32% said they had some LGBT training, and over half said they had no LGBT training. Unfortunately, we didn't find any differences by region, funding of the institution, or whether there was a center of excellence in the state. In our regression analyses, we did not find any significant findings. We found some trends, but neither region, funding of the institution or center of excellence predicted, controlling for all these characteristics, whether an institution had a procedure, a policy, interest to do more, or comprehensive training. I wanted to share just some of the findings that we have in terms of what our participants reported to us, what's being done at some of the places that actually have procedures and policies in place. One institution has an LGBTI health program, and this is their home for all activities around LGBT-related patient care, education, institutional practices, policies, and research. They developed a comprehensive training program that can reach out to all providers, not just physicians, but to nurses and other complementary health staff. And they've integrated LGBT topics into all of their undergraduate, medical, and nursing school curricula. Second example was where an institution put together a comprehensive training webinar for their medical providers. providers were required to, if they chose, complete the webinar, then allow themselves to be put on a list so that if interested individuals called that institution, they could actually be provided a list of people who had successfully completed the training. Of note, the majority of the providers on the list are not necessarily lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender, and the sexual orientation of the providers is not what's listed. It's whether they've completed the competency training. We had a variety of very interesting quotes that I wanted to share with you. Again, this survey was done around the country, and we had very good representation from around the country. I'm glad that you've asked me to participate in this study because it's something that has become a topic of discussion in the last week among us so that we ensure that some protocols are put in place. We are definitely going to create some protocol. I never really thought about it until I was reading your email. It would be great if we had procedures in place. No, we would not be interested in developing any policies. It would be a very political process for us to go through. My guess would be that we're kind of a don't ask, don't tell kind of place. I might be one of the only doctors in the state who would be willing to see transgender patients. Also, from some of the institutions that did not agree to participate, some of the comments we got were they didn't think it was an important issue. It didn't have a bearing on clinical care. Some of the limitations to consider are that we had a 50% response rate, which in fact is quite good for a study of this type. We did have differential response rates by region. We were limited in the availability of institutional characteristics. And when we go back and repeat this study, we'll delve more deeply into the types of centers, level of research that's been done at particular institutions, and both training, clinical care, and research around LGBT health. There also was a differential knowledge and awareness of LGBT issues at each of the institutions. So in summary, the vast majority of academic medical centers in this country do not have LGBT-related policies or programs, or at least they didn't at the time of the survey. Nonetheless, there is a great need and a high level of interest to develop policies and procedures around LGBT health, both from a research perspective and, more importantly, from a clinical perspective in providing care to our individual patients. We did identify some functioning procedures, policies, and competency training, and we're working on putting that into a paper and a brief that can be more generally spread and disseminated. Additional work will follow up to find out whether the institutions that said that they were working on developing programs and policies have actually done anything about it, and whether we can use those as examples of what can be done throughout the country. This is just the specifics of the survey that we answered. Again, since the time of the survey, I've spoken with a number of researchers and clinicians, and there is a lot of interest in this. So we have a lot of interest at UCLA, and we hope that we'll be able to move it forward as an agenda.